Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 145 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap some nerd news. In entertainment, we're going to give our quick thoughts on the Oscars and Mortal Kombat. Then we'll move over into tech news and discuss a crypto exchange disappearing overnight, some new privacy laws being proposed by Congress, the electric Cadillac, some exoskeletons, and a little bit of space news. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right. Episode 145. And this week is another down week on entertainment stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty slow rolling. I mean, it's surprising. You'd think the Hollywood train and everything would be firing up, getting ready.
Everybody was just sitting back and letting Falcon Winter Soldier dominate the entertainment talk. And, you know, it turned out to be a phenomenal series. Disney is proving that they can manage these kind of unique, different storytelling ways through these longer formats. You know, WandaVision was a completely different type of thing that really came out of nowhere, could never really be done in a movie. And told a completely different kind of story, brought in some humor that you don't normally see. And then Falcon Winter Soldier, it just talks, you know, a little more in depth with the characters, these new characters, the struggles that they even have with being the heroes and everything else. And then, you know, I guess a little deeper social commentary as well, spending a little more time and a little more like deliberate thought in how they were going to portray certain things.
Yeah, it's hard to see how or where Falcon and Winter Soldier actually plays out in the grand scheme of the MCU, right? Like, I guess it filled a small gap that you're going to need to have filled as we move forward. But at the same time, it felt very, like, much like a one-off. Like, didn't really advance the MCU any, like, other than, like, because you could have just said Sam Wilson was Captain America and never did this and skipped over it.
Right.
And you'd have been at the same point we're at now. You know, it was
Captain
like
Captain America 4 could have just been Sam Wilson flying in his Captain America suit.
And you just left right after Endgame and been like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. But now you get this backstory. You get to further like cement Winter Soldier, you know, Bucky and Sam being like these, you know, close brotherhood between the two of them and where that really comes from. And like I said, I think, yeah, it's an unnecessary story, but it's that, you know, interlude to another story that's done really well.
They spent $100 million just to kind of fix making Zemo wear the hood at least once. it's basically what they did. Like, oh, you guys all wanted a hood? All right, here you go. Toss me a bone.
And, you know, if you want to look at like what it sets up, it sets up some of the other minor things. You know, they're really, I think, moving towards the Thunderbolts style, you know, bad guys fighting for Thunderbolt Ross. And, you know, you got Zemo now in prison. You've got a bunch of other people that could be pulled into the Thunderbolts out of prison. Now you have U.S. Agent to also support that. And they built out really in a good backstory to who U.S. Agent is that they can build on.
Yeah, they brought in a lot. Yeah, it was entertaining. Like, I did really enjoy it. I'm hoping as we move forward in the MCU that, yeah, it finds this kind of like nice little slot that it nestles itself in and really adds to the context of what the grand universe is. Same thing with WandaVision. It kind of really put more depth to certain characters and introduced a few others. Like, I think they're doing a good job because I think you can go into certain movies now and not have to waste, you know, a rushed half an hour to give a character's backstory or give some situation, some context or some depth. I think that these are good, like, little mini series that are kind of like more drawn out movies. You know, like, they could have did this in a movie form, but I don't think it would have hit as hard. It would have felt rushed. You wouldn't have gotten, you know, attached to anything or really gained much from this if it was in a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even the whole backstory on, was it the GRE or whatever else, even the whole backstory of the refugees and the state that the world was in when, you know,
it was an interesting perspective. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, when you spend 5 years without half the population, and then they come back, it's like, yeah, you're no longer not making enough food for those people to eat. You're no longer making enough.
I think they do a good job of playing that, because it's like something you don't think about with the whole MCU of like how like earth shattering that would be. Is like right as you get used to like everybody being gone, fucking 3.5 billion people just reappear out of nowhere, and you're like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, ah, fuck, you know, and like how they talked about houses foreclosing and families moving on and just like the grand scale of how it would just fuck up everybody's life.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, realistically, you would be producing half of the food needed for the world's population at that point in time. Like, there would be significant issues. And like, I appreciate
that. Snap half the cows too? Like, you think like, like, wasn't that kind of what they implied when all the birds came back? It was all living things. Like, so it would stand to reason that, you know, fucking 4 million cows just popped up out of nowhere. This should really kind of be a food surplus if you really think about it.
That's possible. That's a question to ask like the rooster.
I don't know the whole schematics of how this would play out, but
how many pigs and cows came back?
And like, there's just some farmer standing with like, you know, just pig shit everywhere. Like, what the fuck am I gonna do now?
Yeah, it's the other thing I think I didn't like was the direction they went with, like, the Flag Smashers. Is like, realistically, you could have made the Flag Smashers, I think it's a better story if you made them like actually the sympathetic bad guys. But because like Marvel really wants to cut that clear line of who's bad and who's good, you take people who actually have like a legitimate gripe and you're talking about an actual issue that probably would be real, but then you just slowly turn them into just actually murderous, terrible human beings.
Yeah.
And like, to make that clear line, I wish that line was a little grayer and they didn't like make the Flag Smashers just all of a sudden just be willing to burn a bunch of people in a building who were just
I want to know
there.
Who made their app. Like, how do you get that approved for the App Store? you can't have an initial rollout of anything nowadays that isn't buggy as hell, but they got some phone app that just notifies every terrorist in the area to rise up and do some kind of bidding. Like, that is efficient. Yeah. That is efficient.
It's just 4chan. That's all it is. That's just 2025 4chan. Give it a couple years.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a couple thousand Joshes to an area to beat each other with pool noodles, I guess it's not that hard.
All right. Well, but yeah, no, either way. Great show. We got about a month before we get Loki rolling out. So That's the next one up, and that one also looks like
it looks
there's
great.
No way I'm not watching that every week.
I
there's
know.
Just no like, way I'm not going to do it. So it looks like a phenomenal show.
I think we're getting a good COVID rollout now. I think we're starting to catch up on some of the TV. I think we're going to get a huge television dump in the next few months because of the delay that just happened when everything shut down and finally got ramping up. I think we're at the point where over the next 2-3 months. We're going to start getting just an overload of our shows back. I know Handmaid starts real soon. There's a few shows that are going to be rolling out.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll have a few things to come up and talk about here as movies start ramping up and everything else. But let's talk about last year's movies for a moment here.
Yeah.
And we can just, I guess, recap what we said last week we didn't care about. Oscars came and went. I didn't care about it, but we could at least talk about some of the notable things that came out of it. Some of it being that it was by far the least watched Oscars ever.
I'm not 50% gonna
lie. Of the total people, less than 50% of the average viewing was what was in attendance or watching on Sunday or yesterday.
Well, with the movies that were in the awards and just the lull of content that we had, when the host came out and was just like, if you don't want to hear a bunch of people from Hollywood saying their opinions, and you could change the channel now. And I was like, yep, that sounds like a great idea. And I just changed channel. It's like, I do not care about these movies enough to be sitting lectured to for 3 hours.
Well, and I think that was some of the complaints that I had seen online and stuff, was the fact that, like, not only was it really a bunch of obscure movies that very few people saw, like, there was no, like, major mass appeal movies really that were prominently featured in this, because it was 2020. There just wasn't the blockbusters. There was nothing that drew people like that. So it was a lot of, like, obscure movies that most people didn't see. And then the Oscars, like, really toned down the fanfare. Like, even, like, the opening of it had nothing of interest. It was like Regina King's walking.
No musical numbers. Yeah, no.
So they did some, like, musical numbers, and I guess some of them are really good to watch, but you got to go to YouTube, because they all did them and aired them pre-Oscars instead of during the Oscars, which I don't understand why that makes sense to anybody. Like, that's what you do to liven up all of your boring speeches and everything else that's happening in between.
It felt much like the Screen Actors Guild Awards, because it's just a room full of actors all patting themselves on the back. And, like, it just, there was no, like, audience of actual movie lovers and other creators. And it was just, scoop up the big Hollywood stars and throw them in a room and let's give them statues and awards. And they acted like they were doing such a favor by being live. Like, hey, we're live. We're here, y'all. This isn't a Zoom meeting. Like, we're here. Don't y'all love us?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Either way, I guess if you were a big fan of, like, Nomadland, congratulations. Yeah, your movie won. Like, did very well.
If you're an RV enthusiast, this was your year.
Yeah, I apparently need to watch that movie. Of course, I haven't watched it, and I am an RV enthusiast, so I should watch it just to see my people. But
there was a lot of firsts in the awards. You know, first the Asian director, was it?
First Asian and female. So first Asian director, first woman of color director, she checks both those categories as a first there, winning for Nomadland. The only movie that I think out of pretty much the entire list that I saw, I was a fan of that one, and that's Soul, the animated movie from Disney. I've seen that one. That's a good movie.
No, it was a good movie. I was rooting for Onward, though. I love that movie.
Same for different reasons, family reasons, but either way, it was a good one. A lot of people upset really at the end of it. The last award they saved, and I think they did it fully intentionally, was the Best Actor award, which did not go to Chadwick Boseman. And even though he won pretty much every other award before this, it ends up going to Anthony Hopkins, who didn't even come to give an announcement.
He didn't even show.
So it's like, it really just ended with disappointment for a lot of people, with no speech, no nothing, just kind of like, and the winner is Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, have a good night, everybody.
And, like, Joaquin Phoenix is not the dude up there you want winging that at the end. So you need someone with a little bit more charisma up there, to kind of, like, liven that up and end it well.
But other than that, I guess, Tenet won, so that's cool. Tenet won for special visual effects. I was looking at, like, the list of who they went against. It's like, okay, well, obviously. No big deal there. All right, well, I mean,
I think it was the only movie that, like, had special effects.
Yeah, of any kind of significance.
On the list.
All right, well, I think that's it for the Oscars. Let's move on from that.
Yeah. I actually watched a movie this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, give you a moment to talk about a new movie. I'm sure it's going to be nominated for many Oscars. And that's Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Again, I apologize to any of the Nerd Cantina blog readers. I've slacked on another review. As I was telling you earlier, I'm finding it hard, along with, like, real life time, the motivation to write a review for a movie that goes straight to streaming, because I know everybody else has already watched it, formed their own opinions, and I feel like I'm just preaching to the choir at this point. I enjoyed it at times, almost cringeworthy at other times, but overall I found it an entertaining movie. I rank it up there with, like, the level of, like Kong. Like, it was just as, like, entertaining. You know, like the fight scenes are good, fatalities are good, storyline with humans, meh. Like, you know, like it was funny as hell at times, like legit laughing out loud funny. You know, so like I can't say that it was a bad movie, but there's so many like Mortal Kombat fans that I think had really unrealistic expectations of what a Mortal Kombat movie should be. You know, like they wanted like the Citizen Kane of video game movies. You know, and I'm just like, hey man, like you got to see fatalities. Like
you get some fatalities, yeah. Did you get over here?
Yeah, like
like all right.
They were racial appropriate for almost every character. So like I don't know what more you want them to pull off. Like with this fucking movie.
You know, White Raiden.
You know, like they put effort into it. They didn't hit every mark, but you know it was worth it. I saw it in IMAX, so like the special effects and the fight scenes are great. It was dope. You know, like maybe everybody not liking it is because you sat on your fucking lazy boy and watched it on your fucking Vizio.
Well, I didn't watch it because my 1 month of HBO Max I paid for Justice League, the Snyder Cut there is run out. I might pay for it again and eventually watch it before it disappears off HBO Max.
Well, but, you got to check and see like what's coming out, because you might be able to go like bi-monthly and like just
pound out
a bunch of stuff.
That's the goal here. I do want to see it. I keep seeing all these kind of memes about like the whoever played Kano having being rushed to the emergency room for carrying that movie on his back.
He was great, man. And some people, he was great.
Really enjoying like that character and some aspects of the movie, and like yeah, I go into that movie with zero expectations. Well, so you like, make me laugh, you make me kind of, you know, flinch at a brutal fatality once or twice, and it's a win. Like that's a good movie to me. That's just a good,
like a lot of it just didn't make sense. Like I play the games. I don't know how much I've followed the actual Mortal Kombat storyline, you know, throughout the video games, but you know they have the Outworld versus the Earth Realm and all that, and like Shang Tsung's got all his Outworld guys, and like Cabal, the robot guy, just like knows Kano. Like, like he's like, yeah, I know that guy. He's a dick. And it's like, man, like, all right, well, you must be from Earth. Why are you in Outworld? Why are you fighting for the other team? Like, how'd this all go down? Like, all the, like everybody else is like a reptile dude, and you know, like fucking is from looks like they could be from another realm, and like all of a sudden they just got this one dude on their squad from Earth. It's like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, I don't get that. I must be missing something. You know, and they didn't like they prepare for the big Mortal Kombat tournament. The tournament never even happens in the movie. Never even happens. Like, Shang Tsung's trying to, like, kill them all before the tournament happens. So they have, like, a mini tournament before the actual tournament. Like, I don't think they ever even got to the tournament. So, like, is that Mortal Kombat 2? Like, are we really going to be pot committed for at least a trilogy here?
Absolutely. Nothing is done without an expansion plan. Maybe an HBO Max series. We'll see.
But I mean, a lot of people are all, you know, because there's been a few renditions, they're comparing it to the other ones. And like me, I just walked in ready to see a movie, man. Like I wasn't trying to associate it with anything. I had like very little expectations, and I laughed a whole bunch. You know, like some good fight scenes. Points of it were entertaining. Some points of it were remedial as shit. And I just, I walked out. I was like, okay, I'll take it. I'll take it.
All right. Well, I think that's all we got for entertainment. Let's spend what time we have left here on a little bit of tech news. And this first one is scary as hell to me.
Yeah.
Because I'll explain why here in a moment. But so this last week there was a crypto exchange and founder that disappears with $2 billion.
Yeah. Not one an M. A B.
Yeah. Like, a B. Like so this was a billion. Turkish crypto exchange, and in Turkey there were some other issues around crypto exchanges and issues that were arising, and this specific exchange claimed to be that they were told their members that they were going down for some maintenance at the time, and they shut down the app to where you couldn't transfer, sell, move any of your crypto assets due to the company taking it down for scheduled maintenance. The founder itself leaves for Turkey on what he claims to be a legitimate business trip that just happened to coincide with the exchange going down. And then all of a sudden, that scheduled maintenance kept going for a day and then 2 days. And then the founder's no longer being seen or heard from. And now there's 300,000 users with $2 billion total in assets gone.
I'm not clear on how he was able to actually take the money to spend it, because it's all in digital.
I don't know.
I don't think
at this point.
Because everything's tracked through the blockchain. So, did he convert all these tokens into a different, more valuable currency and then dip out? Was it a bank account full of cash from every time somebody bought a token? It actually went to, the actual money went to an account. And, it's not like he could reach into a computer and pull out wads of money and then go into hiding. I don't get how this actually worked, but it's very scary, as I have bought tokens in the shadiest places of the internet.
And, so this is where I said, this was on our outline. We talked about this being part of our show this week, a couple of days ago. And it's just been a wild story. And then I have way too many crypto accounts these days, because I just got fascinated with crypto and started just buying random nonsense. One of them is Voyager, and this morning Voyager went down for maintenance, and the whole time I'm just at noon I got a second email from them saying that they're extending their maintenance period and it'll be back up shortly, and I'm sweating and I'm just thinking, yeah, and it's not like I have a significant amount in there, but I have enough where I'd be really upset.
I picture that Key and Peele meme with just the dude sitting with sweat all over his forehead dripping down.
I can happily report now that that it's back and I can trade and move things around. But yeah, it just really goes to show that, man, some of these exchanges, especially these obscure exchanges, it's one thing if you're Coinbase and you're publicly traded now, and that's why I think it's big that Coinbase went public, because there is some specific regulation. They're going to, Coinbase isn't going to close up one day and your money's going to disappear. But these other ones that exist all over the place, once you've made your trades,
yeah, there's maybe a lot moving of pump that stuff and dump to a schemes.
Trusted wallet. Yeah, maybe using that, moving that stuff to a trusted wallet that's then secured is going to be your best bet, instead of just leaving these things sitting in these exchanges.
So this also makes me really question, 300,000 people in Turkey gave $2 billion worth of tokens. How much money is circulating in the world? in the globe, not just our country, it's got to be an unfathomable number. Because if 300,000 people can generate up to $2 billion in crypto in one country, it's kind of blowing my mind, the amount of just money that circulates in the globe, in what, how great of a society we could actually have if we just really focused our attention on important things. Instead, we just burn $2 billion in crypto.
$2 billion. It's more than that now. So one of the reasons why it was Turkey that had this issue is there was a huge crackdown in the sense of, so Turkey's just bleeding money, having terrible runaway inflation that has been affecting the lira pretty badly. And Turkey put a complete stop, making it illegal for digital asset trading. So the entire country shut down digital asset trading, which is one of the leading things to this company then shutting down, the CEO fleeing and taking he didn't take the money. I don't know what he's doing with it, but he can't really access it.
That's what I'm saying.
At least to my knowledge. But he shuts down a second crypto exchange, a Bitcoin-specific exchange, has also shut down in Turkey. So it's more than the $2 billion in that first exchange. The second one, I haven't seen numbers that comes out and says exactly what the user base and value was. But Turkey and the government regulation that has now made it illegal to trade and buy digital assets, because people in Turkey were just buying a Bitcoin because it was a safer place than keeping it in the garbage lira that was running away with
and
inflation.
And that's what you're going to find is we've seen a lot of countries start banning crypto because with this being a global exchange rather than based on the strength and faith in a country's, currency, you're going to see this a lot. Like people are everyone makes fun of crypto because it's like, well, it's just imaginary. It has no value. And it's like, so is that piece of paper in your pocket. Like this thing only gives me bread because the person I'm handing it to says, I'll take that piece of paper for that bread. Like there is no other like magic fucking beans that make this exchange any kind of like all currency is only strengthened by the faith the people using it have behind it. And I think a lot of governments are really freaking out right now because there is an option to not like worry about inflation based on government spending and things like that for countries. So they're putting their money into crypto, which essentially weakens when you have it on such a large scale, it essentially weakens the national currency. And that's another very scary kind of thing that's going on right now.
Yeah, the economics behind it is over my head. But the regulation
but I got some moonshot coins.
I for sure do. And I still, we don't have to go down the deep end on crypto, but I'm obviously a big believer. I believe that we're still on the leading edge of crypto adoption. I think it's still going to big SEC. I've listened to a couple of recent interviews with one of the chairpersons of the SEC, and she's very much moving towards normalizing it at the SEC level and figuring out how to trade it better and really pushing towards having like ETF funds that you can trade in the stock market that are backed by crypto assets and really moving towards normalizing it as a place to store value and to actually make exchanges and make it as a true currency.
Well, it's actually really surprising to me now too, because like as I scroll through the social media accounts and everything, I see a lot of wannabe like influencers when it comes to the stock market and crypto. And I see a lot of these influencers just hyping up these shit coins that no one's ever heard of. And a lot of it is these cryptos, they just pop up one day, they dump a bunch of money into marketing, let everybody in the world catch this like craze on their cheap penny crypto coin. They pump it up really high and then next thing you know, it vanishes like this one, or they, everybody pulls their money really fast. Like all the initial creators have all these coins. So when it gets pumped up to a certain height, they all pull their money and the bottom falls out on everybody else who invested. And like, it's still the Wild West in many ways. Like it's pretty crazy.
There's almost a brand new cryptocurrency token or coin that is created daily. Yeah. And
crypto's most of them, going the way of podcasts. Every asshole's got a crypto now.
And each time you get these rug pulls and whatever else, I think it weakens the case for these use cases of Bitcoins, Ethereum, the ones that actually
Nerd Cantina does not endorse any individual coin.
Not one bit. I am not here to tell you to buy whatever.
We are not giving any financial advice.
What's funny is I was going to say like some fake name for a coin, and then I thought whatever I say has a good chance of being real, right? Like, I mean, that's the honest truth, that some of these that have just these absurd names and, Poo Moon and whatever else are all coins. So I won't try to come up with a fake one. Just we're not endorsing any specific one. But I've bought a bunch of shitty ones.
I've clicked buy in some websites that made me feel really dirty afterwards.
You just cross your fingers for the next 2 hours waiting and hoping that money doesn't disappear.
I feel like back in the day when you're downloading some kind of torrent off LimeWire, I just feel like my computer's just going to get AIDS from buying this crypto.
Yeah, so I don't know, let's see where these things go. But this example with Turkey, it's a scary one, and it shows the power that, yes, that these certain exchanges have, and then even more, it shows the power that government regulation can have on people, in the sense that, you know, if the United States government, if the SEC didn't have some chair people that were in there voting for legislation that's pro crypto, if it went the other way around, would be a scary day.
Anybody that has a crypto wallet felt that dick punch last week, boy. All this stuff came crumbling down, everybody felt that punch, man. Lots of red lines everywhere.
But all right, let's move on here. Let's talk about some privacy laws. And this is a fairly new article coming out in the last couple of days, and it's some new legislation proposed by two senators, bipartisan, I suppose, in the sense that it's a Democrat from Oregon, Senators Ron Wyden.
I think we could pat ourselves on the back for this one, too. I think we did a good job of trying to bring this to the forefront for our listeners.
Yeah, so we've got Senator Ron Wyden and Rand Paul from Kentucky. And Rand Paul's this weird guy. I really don't like him.
I know.
This isn't a political thing. This is a human being thing. I don't like him. But there's a lot of things that Rand Paul does that I'm on the side of, and a lot of things that I absolutely think he's out to lunch on. This is one that I'm good with. Like, there are certain things that actually he brings a lot of legislation forward, and this is one that I think is pretty solid. And what this is, it's a bill. It's kind of casually known as the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, which is designed to close up loopholes where federal law enforcement, local law enforcement are using commercially purchasable data in lieu of getting a search warrant. They're buying your location data from pick an app that tracks your location. It's almost all of them that are on your phone. And you know, so
do you have a phone? Then you're already lost.
So instead of using, you know, the right procedures to get a warrant from a court order to get your geolocation data and that from the cell phone companies and whatever else, whatever difficult path that they have, instead of doing that, they just pay for a data packet from one of these companies that is tracking your data, and then they can compile where you've been. They can compile who you've called or what you've texted and things. And it's a loophole around them not doing the due diligence to ensure that they actually have a right to that information, that they're not violating your Fourth Amendment of search and seizure, because they're saying that they don't need the Fourth Amendment doesn't protect you because you're making this information commercially available, so they're not doing anything but buying it. And yeah, you're not wrong. Like, you're not wrong. We are letting these companies track this data. But at the same point in time, I don't need you as a federal, as a law enforcement agency, to be able to legally go buy that information. Do the right work as a prosecutor, as a law enforcement. Do the right work. Adhere to the constitutional protections that we were supposed to have of, hey, search and seizure requires probable cause, requires certain steps for you to gain any information about me.
Yeah, we already went over all these points when this story first broke that they were actually doing this. We thought this was like something important that everybody should know about and should care about. And I'm glad to see the government doing something. Is it bad, though, that I've lost so much faith in our government that this kind of makes me wonder, like, what the fuck does Rand Paul have his fingers in? Like, any, I've lost so much faith in our government that they can't be doing this because we care about our rights, right? Like, Rand Paul's got to be in some really dirty shit, right? Like,
he's got that Foursquare check-in at the airport heading over to Epstein Island, and he was the mayor
of Epstein Island on Foursquare.
He's just trying to keep that locked up. That's all.
For all you Xennials, that was a popular app about 8 years ago that invented check-ins. So if you're checking into anywhere on Facebook or Instagram, you can thank Foursquare. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, like, I think so. This is protecting the individual data for that person. It also is making it to where, like, Clearview AI, who just scraped everybody's profile pictures and all their pictures to create a facial recognition database that has everything you've ever done as a part of it. It also protects against that, to where these, like, if that data was scraped without a warrant, then they can't even hire those companies and use those services provided by those companies. So there's a lot of topics that we've talked about in the realm of digital privacy and law enforcement over the last 2.5 years.
You know who's really failing us right now in like bringing this to attention and you know, like memes are good, but like whatever happened to the political cartoonist that's going to draw like the big evil head guy scooping up all the data and eating it? And like, like there's not a, like a meme doesn't do something like this justice. A meme doesn't do this justice. What happened to the good old political cartoonist? Like
they still exist, but like you've got to be like one of those bougie New Yorker subscribers. That's the only way you get it.
Make it an NFT, man. Like, it'll be fine.
I think that's the wrong audience for that. Well, I don't know. In the end, I think that this is good legislation. It's not going to pass. I've never had faith that these things are going to pass. There's going to be way too many old people that are going to sit there and bog this down with questions about, like, you know, what is Facebook? And other elements that, and not knowing still how to use the internet. There's going to be, I would imagine, some significant pushback against this. But ultimately, I like that, at least that the conversation's happening. And I hope it passes. I just, yeah, like you said, you have little faith in the people who are bringing these things
forward.
Well,
I mean,
I just have little faith in overall just effectiveness of the government.
They did the whole big thing about cookies, you know, and like you thought they were doing good by like, hey, you can't take all these internet cookies. I don't know what a cookie is, but people are telling me that having all these cookies is bad. Like, yeah, you can't do it. And now all that came of it is that any website I go to, I get a fucking pop-up now where I like, it's like, hey, you want to check this out? You got to accept our cookies.
Yeah, like, that's all we got.
It's like, that's all I got, man. I got to, like,
got it. Okay.
Like, you just made my life one step harder. Like, it's all the government did. Like, they saw an internet problem and just made my life fucking harder. I'm no better than where I was when I started. I just have one more fucking hoop to jump through now, you fucking dicks. Like, I don't see this being any different, like, at all.
That's absolutely the truth. But like I said, hopefully it passes before I commit some kind of terrible crime. I think my past is safe. I don't know what I'm going to do in the future. So let's go ahead and protect my privacy for the future. All right, let's move on to some softer topics. Those two were scary and deep. The rest of the way is smooth sailing here. there's a new electric Cadillac, the Lyriq, debuting, showing that you know, Cadillac is moving towards an all electric future.
I mean, honestly, at this point, if you're a car company and you aren't making electric cars, you deserve to die off. Like, when your company goes bankrupt, don't come out to the government for some bailout or some shit if you're still not making, you know, at least a few model electric cars, you know. And as Elon Musk just got picked to host Saturday Night Live in 2 weeks, I really have to, like, give this man mad credit for just making electric cars cool. I mean, we had electric cars before Elon, right? Like, there was a bunch of them. Like, nobody was winning any cool points for driving a Prius. Like, that was 100%.
Yeah. I mean, Prius was actually a pretty successful hybrid. I mean, you're talking about, like, Nissan Leaf. Like, yeah. Nobody was driving the Nissan Leaf.
You know, like, he said, why do electric cars have to look like fucking these pieces of shit? And he came out with a very efficient, dope-ass electric car that looked like a fucking Maserati. And everyone was like, all right, I'll drive that. Put all kinds of Spaceballs references inside and a giant iPad, and fucking people were like, sold, man. Fucking sold. And now he's got this great successful company, and I'm glad to see companies like Cadillac, you know, that define luxury cars for decades, jumping on board with this.
Well, and what I find even better for the industry is, I think it's, I want to say it's Chevy that's been advertising and buying up a bunch of commercial spots showing their platform system, like, that it's, and we've talked about it in the past, that like once you just really strip it down to its basic components, you could have a functioning vehicle that is nothing but a battery platform at the floor And then the motors are in the wheels themselves because you don't need combustion nonsense or transmissions or anything else. The motors can actually fit in the wheels themselves. And then that's all it is. And then you can put whatever the hell you want on it. You want a pickup truck? Okay, put a pickup truck on that platform. You want to put a van on there? Cool, minivan on that platform. You want a sports car?
We're gonna have a day where it's like design your own car. Yeah.
And Chevy,
pick your hood.
So
pick
Chevy's
your...
already doing that. Chevy right now is putting a bunch of different types of modular frames that you can put on. Like they've got a base floor electric system. And you could build a bunch of different frames on top of it. And it's
well, even this Cadillac isn't that much more expensive than a regular combustion engine Cadillac would be either. You know, like, yes, they're still expensive cars, but Cadillac's always been an expensive car, and it's not any more expensive than it was before. So to see them taking the Cadillac luxury, I've always been a fan of Cadillacs. I had an 88 Fleetwood for mad years. I loved driving that fucking living room everywhere. Like, it was the greatest car I ever owned. I'm really happy to see Caddy joining us in the future.
Yeah, I'm still always excited to see the future of this stuff. So good to see Cadillac in the game here. And
there's a link in the show notes so you can check it out. You can see all the specs and how it looks, and it's going to be dope, man. I'm excited. I'm still going to get a Tesla, though. I still got to get a Tesla.
I'm going to get like the Ford Focus version of electric cars.
Oh, yeah. Like
and a used one, too.
That's what I'm kind of interested to see is that we're starting to now hit the time frame where we're going to see a flood of electric cars on the used car market. You know, like we're just starting to see like those Teslas, people maybe selling their old Tesla to upgrade to the newer models. And it's to be seen how the used car market is going to be, you know, treating the electric vehicle. Battery life is always a worry on these situations. It's not like an engine, you know, you don't know how long these batteries can hold the charge. And yeah, I'm excited to see where that actually heads to, since you mentioned it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here to, I guess, just a cool little science experiment here and story here. They've got they're testing some new exoskeletons type prosthetics, not just a normal prosthetic or exoskeleton, but one that has been programmed now to a neural interface. Again, think the expanded use of things like Neuralink. This one isn't tied to Neuralink, but it's tied to another neurological mapping, which has been around for a while. And in this, what they did is they tested somebody who had a artificial leg, so from an artificial joint from the knee and the ankle. And they were testing this prosthetics that the exoskeleton would normally function, had pretty good range of motion, just from like the predictive way that it was programmed. As you move, it tries to mirror your intentions or whatever else. Well, now they've taken that same prosthetic, hooked it up to a neural interface. So now of course, did all the mapping and testing and everything that they needed to do. But there's images of like the individual just going into a squat to pick up a basketball, and the range of motion when it was just doing the predictive kind of reflexive way of assisting him, he was able to pick up the basketball and bend and still be able to walk and do things. But once you add the Neuralink or neural image mapping system, he's able to get into a pretty deep squat, similar to like an actual knee, because it opened up range of motion, responsiveness at the joints and ankles, allowing it to go deeper just based off of understanding what the individual was trying to get from his prosthetic.
Well, I'm attributing a lot of this to the same kind of like, so did you see that robot Groot? I don't know why I didn't put this on the outline and send it. Like,
no.
So there's a robot Groot, and the company that made it has kind of cracked the code on fluid body movements. So it doesn't have like the robotic arms move, like, you know, Boston Dynamics kind of like robot where you could tell like it walking. Like, I think they cracked the code for swag. So like they downloaded swag into a robot, and like the thing walks with like a sway, and like the arms don't go in the same repetitive back and forth motion. There's like some variation in how the arms move. And like, I think being hooked up, having an exoskeleton hooked up to the neural interface gives it that same kind of like down, like it's the human is USB swag. Like that's essentially what it is you are plugging in the swag to the exoskeleton, and now the sensors are picking up that variation in human muscle movement that a robot up until now really couldn't mimic, because it is somewhat chaotic, right? Like when you walk, you have the same kind of motion, but your arms don't always flow in the same direction. There's always a little bit of variation. There's a certain sway to your body and things like that. And they're starting to really crack on how to do that with robots.
I mean, it's all interesting to me. You know, I think the mechanics of these things can be, you know, the multi-plane movement of joints and stuff like that can be simulated pretty well with modern technology. It's just that kind of natural, getting a natural movement to it. That's difficult. And these neural pathways, if you can take a handicapped individual and give them prosthetics that is tied to the neural pathways to get better dexterity in the fingers, get, you know, in artificial fingers and artificial limbs, ankles and knees, it'll have a huge effect, and just further demonstrates that, you know, the how far we're getting. And
I would really love if the technology that integrates this and everything actually acronymed out to SWAG. Like it would really complete my life. I would really find joy in, like, and I wish I was smart enough and not as stoned to where I could come up with an acronym for SWAG right now on the spot, but I'm just like slacking on what the G would stand for.
Yeah, I got nothing for you. All right, well let's move on to one of our last topics here, and that's, so we've got some new issues with Apple and ransomware getting into Apple, and it's like this article from Ars Technica is talking about how this Apple's ransomware mess is the future of online extortion, and looking at how there's a $50 million ransom to not release certain schematics that they stole from an Apple supplier, to not release those. And, you know, now we've now gone the full gambit of various types of ransomware, where it's just, you know, user data and passwords and usernames and passwords, or, you know, location data or whatever data packets that exist out there. You know, we've seen the email server hacks and all that stuff. And now we've got,
this is like the very low tech version of hijacking, like this shit though, isn't it? Right. Like you actually went to, like you robbed the manufacturer schematics. Like we're bypassing software. The software is so good. Fuck your software. We're just going to go to the blueprints and grab the blueprints.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it just shows more, you know, more ways that they can exploit these companies is, you know, all right, well, instead of going after your users, or instead of going after, you know, data that's kind of hard to pass around, well, we can just threaten Apple that their proprietary software and hardware and what they're building into their systems, we'll just make it publicly available. If you don't tell us, we'll just allow everybody to clone and see exactly what you're putting into your systems that you thought was pretty well kept secret. It's just more problems in this ransomware world.
Yeah, I mean, haters gonna hate, man. Like criminals gonna be, they're gonna try to steal something. They're always gonna try to find an edge to extort money out of this. I'm waiting to see how Apple handles this. Like they're usually pretty tight with their security and how they handle these things. I've always been impressed with, you know, the fact that you don't see Apple's name in these things very often.
Yeah, and part of this one being a little unique is the way in which the ransomware attack happened, and how the ransomers are even kind of failing to encrypt their files, and really they're just willing to make this open to the world. So it's a difficult attack. You know, I don't know. I wish we knew more about, you know, what the effect was here. I wonder if there's like corporate insurance to pay a ransomware these days. That probably has to exist somewhere.
That just encourages this shit even more. Like if they know insurance companies are just going to pay it out, like paying out ransoms hasn't worked out well in Brazil. I don't think. I don't know if it's going to work out well in the internet.
Yeah, not sure, but it's. Just more complications here in the ransomware world. But let's move to our final topic here. A little bit of space news. And this was just, I continue to be fascinated by all of the things that this Perseverance rover is doing. And this last week, another successful thing for Perseverance rover as they, I think they did another like three flights with their little helicopter. And now for the first time ever, the Perseverance rover has produced oxygen on Mars itself.
Feels kind of important, right?
Yeah.
feels like this is kind of a big deal. Like if we're colonizing Mars, be kind of nice to make our own oxygen.
Yeah, at least make a little bit of it, right? We gotta be able to do something with it, with the atmosphere. It was able to produce some O2. I don't know, to what level and how difficult will it be to actually make a significant amount, but at least it's for the first time ever you've proven that you can convert the carbon dioxide to oxygen from Mars. I'm sure that they're, in this test, they're gathering how efficient that is, what type of energy, what type of, ability to convert this they're going to have. And it all goes into, eventually putting human beings on Mars.
And give the data to the eggheads, let them crunch the numbers, let them improve it, perfect it, make it smaller, put some sexy on it, and let's get to Mars.
Yeah. I mean, it's good timing to talk about oxygen. And then also just this morning, Elon Musk talked about how, in his words, bunch of people will probably die when humans fly to Mars.
just a reminder, we're not picking them back up. Just a reminder, we're not going to pick them up.
He says that, he reiterated to the fact that he thinks that SpaceX will be ready to send humans in 2026, and it will be volunteers only, because more than likely, a bunch of them are going to die. you really kind of have to wonder, like, what's a bunch to you? what is that quantity of volunteers that you pretty casually, I mean, it's true. Like, he's not lying. But I'm really curious on what is that number in his head?
I feel, and I'm wondering like what prompted him to even say that. It's like, all I ask is if you want a toast. Like, telling me all these people are going to die on Mars. Like, I just like saying it. I just like saying it.
It was in an interview for an article. But he talks about it being the fact that it's like going to Mars is like any other expedition in history, right? Like a bunch of people died trying to cross the Atlantic too, and a bunch of people died exploring Antarctica. And like
shouldn't they shoot two rockets to Mars at the same time and call them Lois and Clark?
I can get down with that one,
right? Like that makes sense to me. I don't think we should send three and name them the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. I don't think that aged well. I think if we just do two and name them Lewis and Clark, I think that's a win.
Yeah, and I kind of want to watch. Apparently, this interview is going to stream here soon on YouTube. But he talks about it, and he talks in greater detail about how the fact that the mission to Mars is going to be, it's going to be dangerous, it's uncomfortable, it's a long journey, you might not come back alive, but it will be a glorious adventure is how he describes it. And it's like he's not wrong, and there's going to be no shortage of people
who are going to sign up for it. Might not come back alive, like you're not coming back. Like we've already established this, we are dropping you off, this is a one-way ticket.
Like, yeah, I mean,
I appreciate you setting the expectation of people to die, but I think setting the expectation that they might come home is a little ingenuous. Disingenuous.
I like his honest approach towards advertising. Here's some more quotes from this interview. He put, "You might die, and you probably won't have good food and all the things." It's an arduous and dangerous journey where you may not come back alive, but it's a glorious adventure. Sounds appealing? Then Mars is your place. And he said, that's my ad. That's my ad for Mars. that's what he put. So, got it.
And, everybody's ripping on this guy for hosting Saturday Night Live. Like, he's got no comedic timing or anything. I think this dude's hilarious.
Oh, he's going to be terrible. I'm gonna I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in a while. I'm going to watch this one, and he's going to be bad.
It can't be much worse than any Christopher Walken skit.
How dare you?
Like, I hope they do the 2020 version, 21 version of More Cowbell with Elon Musk. I think he's the only one that could deliver it with that monotone. He's
going to play the same character in every sketch. It's just going to be him either being a robot or a nerd in every sketch. That's it.
I'm excited. Like, I'm looking forward to it.
But all right. It's a week in news.
Yeah, that's a week.
Let's call it. I think at this time, do the normal things. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us here on this this episode 145 here. You can check out some of these little articles and things that we posted over at thenerdcantina.com/community or find the specific articles we talked about today over at thenerdcantina.com/show145 to check out the show notes.
And a little bit of advertisements for something fun we're doing in the cantina. On May the 4th, Star Wars Day, we are doing a group painting. We have an event created in the cantina community. I want to see anybody listening to this join up. We are going to pay $15 Canadian, so I think it's only like 13 or 12 bucks American. Like, I think it's only like 12 bucks American, but $12 gets you the Zoom link to the art class. You buy your own supplies, and we're going to paint a nice sunsetting Yoda with TIE fighters on the Star Wars Day. So I think it'll be fun. We're all going to post our pictures up in the cantina. Should be a good time. So I want to take this time to get as many of you to join up. I want to see like 40 different renditions of this painting. Like, I think it'll be amazing.
All right. Let's make that happen. And until next week, nerds, talk to you later.
See ya.